The new edition is out. It's called Great Performances Spoiled by Blunders. Let's bring in Jerry Thompson of Ducks Illustrated. JT, how's it going?
Hey, it's going well. The sun's still shining, although Saturday night, I wasn't sure if it would really come up the next day.
I happen to have had a deep conversation with the sun, and after much consideration, it decided to show up Sunday anyway. Before we get going, first of all, I know you. You make a law. You're one of the people who's unyielding about the uniforms. So what are you thinking about the green and yellow?
Fantastic. It's too bad it didn't, on national TV, one of the largest audiences in a while, result in a victory, but I'll take the green and yellow any day over some of those other gray and black colors, which have nothing against gray and black, just not on the Ducks.
And, of course, the publication is out. Let the folks know where they can get this free Ducks Illustrated.
At your local Dairy Marts, Buy Marts, UVO Duck Stores.
All righty. I bring this up occasionally, and you're the first to admit it. You've been following this program a long, long time. Sometimes there could be a tough loss, but it could have been during a season when they were going to go 2-9 anyway. Where they were, where they landed in 2016, last year, the way the season ended, the performance against Stanford overall, how, of all the ones you've watched, how bad of a gut punch loss was that?
There's been worse, believe it or not, and they've been by Stanford. I'll date myself. 1964, obvious roughing the punter. Oregon was, I think, undefeated. No, they weren't undefeated, but they were definitely in the Rose Bowl race, and it wasn't called. It would have won the game right there. 65 down at Stanford, obvious, I mean, a pass way over the head of the receiver, holding penalties called on Les Palm about 20 yards from the play. Oregon was undefeated at that time. Kind of a consistent theme here about referees. I don't like to whine about the refs, but this one was particularly bad.
Yeah, I was looking at that. You know, I'm not aware of this. The 1964 game, you were right. They had just won 7-0 at Washington. They were playing Stanford in Portland and lost 10-8. Wow.
Yeah, it was Bob Berry, the first team All-American quarterback, co-quarterback All-American with Craig Morton, if you remember him from Cal.
Of course.
Was injured. Doug Post was the punter, and he was roughed as he punted the ball. No call, as referees are looking right at it. There was only 39 seconds or something left that would have given Oregon the ball. They would have taken a knee this time for sure. But they didn't get that chance. Stanford kicked the field goal to win it by 1 point.
You know,
the fact. You live through the trials and tribulations, and hopefully this will make the Ducks stronger and like they did Joey in 2001, where they had the tough loss to Stanford. That was one of the top losses, of course. But came back, as Mike Bellotti said, let's not let Stanford beat us twice. And I think it was Washington State. We went up there and beat them the next game.
I like the fact that more than 50 years ago, you could act like they just lost the game last week and you're still pissed off about it.
Well, Len Casanova was when I interviewed him on the shameless plug, the history video of Oregon football. He wasn't very happy about it.
By the way, I know it's too late, and like you said, you know, the refs weren't the one who fumbled, and they're not the ones who get beat on defense. But, man, on pages 20 and 21, you got a couple of photographs up close and personal. Dylan Mitchell, what was his name? Abito in overtime. And then the last play, kind of ironic that the Stanford player committed the penalty that he was named after.
Right. Elijah Holder. Holder was holding Brendan Schooler. It's obvious. Usually I like to get a photo of maybe a victory, but this was evidence to convict number 13. I guess that's ironic, too, how unlucky we were that number 13 held Schooler blatantly with a referee looking right at it, as I was able to snap off that photo. And the reason he was able to slap the ball away was because he was holding his left shoulder and spinning him around so that he couldn't get to the ball. I guess the Ducks have to be tougher and push the defender down and then try to catch the ball. A little sarcasm there, of course.
I got it, but it just the picture you get, and with as prominent as Oregon's, you know, bright green and yellow are, it just it kind of stands out a little more. But you mentioned something, man. It's amazing how often it surfaces that when you're in a goal line situation, what is the logic between about would it be such a crime? And I know that they operate, be it the pistol and the spread and the up-tempo, everything's at a shotgun, but it would be such a crime if circumstances warranted to get your quarterback old school right under the center's butt.
Well, yeah, it's Alabama, Clemson, you name it, USC, Stanford. I mean, even Washington State at times, I think, does that. I don't know why Oregon doesn't do it. I will point out that 3 years ago, there's nothing, what this game taught us, there's no gimme. There's nothing that we can assume. We're first and goal at the one, and we fumbled a handoff, otherwise we'd have probably won the game going away. But 3 years ago at Stanford was usually in the shotgun, but they went under center twice. Both times they fumbled, and Oregon recovered, and that was a big part of the victory down on the farm. So you never, even though I agree that we should go under center, it's never a sure thing that you're going to execute that play. And that's why my 0-0, I basically said, you know, the coaches didn't lose this game. Yeah, there was. I would have, at the time, thought we should have taken a knee and tried the punt and all that. But, you know, you hang on to the ball, you make a good snap from center, and the game goes totally a different way. I mean, we wouldn't even be talking about this.
No, there are probably fans out there who have woken up each night this week with one of the seven different things that could have happened to make the outcome come differently. But your senior spotlight is always awesome. Tony Brooks James, and you know, a lot of people were wondering actually why wasn't he getting the ball as the senior late in the game. Turned out he was a little tweaked, but you talked with him. You know, I've been in groups that have spoken with him, a really affable, terrific young guy. What were some of the impressions you came away with?
Well, one, when you know a running back, you ask him how fast he is, and he measures it in miles per hour rather than a 40 time. You know, he's so unique. he was running at 21 miles per hour when he weighed 170. Now he's at 22 miles per hour at 190. So I did want to mention that for those who read Ducks Illustrated or those who don't, this is not just a magazine for jocks. I mean, Steve Tannen, yours truly, in Mallard Musings, begins his whole story waxing eloquent, citing John Greenleaf Whittier of all the sad words that tongue or pen, the saddest are these, it might have been. Well, I'm going to add that to Tony Brooks James. Tony Brooks James, I will quote the Barb of Avon, to thine own self be true. And what I'm referring to is that Tony Brooks James grew up in the shadow of the University of Florida Gators in Gainesville, but his mother loved Miami, and so he decided he was wanting to go to Miami, but he got an offered a scholarship in Miami, but to himself he was true. He said, I was just going to get in too much trouble in South Beach. So he came all the way west to Oregon, where ironically he is being coached by Miami grad himself, Mario Cristobal. So,
wow. You
know, just putting this a little together and get us in a different frame of mind.
No, that's awesome. Yeah, you think about, first of all, I'm a big fan of his mom's already because of the schools in Florida. I'm a huge Miami fan, so just there. The publication also has good stuff on volleyball, who, of course, have a big weekend coming up starting tonight. And it always great photos, but, man, these uniforms just really pop. The photographer and you have got to love these.
Yeah, Scott Kelly and we also had O-Duck Ruben Drones, which was great to talk to him. And you're a Giants fan, aren't you?
Am I missing something? No.
So, Ruben said, one of his biggest highlights, of course, is winning the Super Bowl against New England. As he put it, they went 18-0 with one giant loss.
Oh, I love it. That's very well put. Hey, he played 9 years in the NFL. And, of course, you know, that I'm a believer, and maybe it's the teams I've seen. The team 20 years ago that started out so well with Akili Smith, at the time, I think that was probably the most lethal offense we'd seen from Oregon with the kind of season Smith had. And, of course, you know, those numbers would get dwarfed. But at the time, that 1998 season will always stick out to me as being pretty special and really entertaining.
Right. And four times in his career, Reuben Groms ran for over 200 yards. That Michigan State game was his first game. Came out and blew him out of the state out of Ots, and he gained 202 yards. Got a picture of him with his Super Bowl ring, and he's looks like he's pretty close to being in playing shape, although I think he'd be more of a fullback than a halfback. He's got a little more weight on him.
Yep.
He could have been blocking for Cyrus, you know.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I don't see him as a scat back anymore, but either way, JT, again, Dairy Mart and Buy Marts and the Duck Store, does that cover it where folks can get the magazine?
Yes, that will cover it for now, and hope we can beat those Bears down in Berserkly.
Yeah, well, here we go. Now it's time to check the bounce-back ability scale. Have a good one. Great stuff as always. Appreciate the time, and we'll catch up soon.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
All right, take it easy.